the great big dipper, we are washed by the very same rain. We are swimming in the stream together, some in power, some in pain. We can worship this ground we walk on, cherishing the beings that we live beside. Loving spirits will live forever. We're all swimming to the other side. I am alone, I am searching, hungering for answers in my time. I am balanced at the brink of wisdom. I'm impatient to receive a sign. I move forward with my senses open. Imperfection, it be my crime. In humility, I will listen. We're all swimming to the other side. We are living beneath the great big dipper. We are washed by the very same rain. We are swimming in the stream together, some in power, some in pain. We can worship this ground we walk on, cherishing the beings that we live beside. Loving spirits will live forever. We're all swimming to the other side. On this journey through thoughts and feelings, binding intuition, my head, my heart, I am gathering the tools together. I'm preparing to do my part. All of those who have come before me, band together and be my guide. Loving lessons that I will follow. We're all swimming to the other side. We are living beneath the great big dipper. We are washed by the very same rain. We are swimming in the stream together, some in power, some in pain. We can worship this ground we walk on, cherishing the beings that we live beside. Loving spirits will live forever. We're all swimming to the other side. When we get there, we'll discover all of the gifts we've been given to share have been with us since life's beginning, and we never noticed they were there. We can balance at the brink of wisdom, never recognizing that we've arrived. Loving spirits will live together. We're all swimming to the other side. We are living beneath the great big dipper. We are washed by the very same rain. We are swimming in the stream together, some in power, some in pain. We can worship this ground we walk on, cherishing the beings that we live beside. Loving spirits will live forever. We're all swimming to the other side. Loving spirits will live forever. We're all swimming to the other side.
Wow. The town of Centralia, Pennsylvania had a messy problem. It was their garbage. In the late 1950s and 1960s, makeshift dumps were popping up around town. But when the garbage began to spill into the graveyard, people complained. The city had a great idea. So there's an abandoned strip mine, they said. Why not use that as the official dump? For a while, that worked okay. People had the sense that they were throwing their garbage away. Then, one tiny thing happened that changed everything. And it wasn't really for the better. On May 27th, 1962, someone lit a match and set that garbage dump on fire. Unfortunately, the garbage was sitting on a seam of coal. And the coal underground caught fire. Of course, people tried to put the fire out. They tried to dig it out, pour sand in, but nothing actually worked. The fire is still burning. It's in underground depths of up to 300 feet over an 8-mile stretch, about 3,700 acres. At its current rate, it could continue to burn for over 250 years. Cool, weird, scary. What does it have to do with our practice of Unitarian Universalism? Well, in an attempt to throw the garbage away, the people of Centralia destroyed their community by the way they tried to deal with it. What they didn't recognize is that there's no such place as a way. I was born on April 30th, 1972, in a small hospital in Belgium where my parents were stationed on an army base. That day, I weighed 2 pounds and 14 ounces. The doctors told my parents that I was going to die and that they would make arrangements. After 12 hours, the doctor said that maybe I wouldn't die, but I was going to be a vegetable. We don't use that word anymore, but that's what they used back then. After 12 more hours, the doctor said that maybe I wouldn't be a vegetable, but I would probably never walk or talk or be potty trained. After 12 more hours, the doctor said that I would probably be severely intellectually disabled and might someday be able to work in sheltered employment. My mother says that I taught myself how to read when I was 3, beginning with headlines and stories from the newspaper. Eventually, I became a teacher of languages, English and Spanish. I would become a lawyer, applying stories of law to complex problems. And all that began with my parents' certainty that imperfection didn't make me disposable. After visiting doctors and specialists, my parents received the news that I have cerebral palsy. Cerebral palsy happens when the brain cells responsible for muscle control and movement either fail to develop or are injured. Like what probably happened in my case was a lack of oxygen during the birth process. It can be a stable condition. Thankfully, I do have a life and body that provide me with opportunities to move through the world, not as someone who is sad about what isn't possible, but rather as someone curious about what else is possible. While cerebral palsy has presented challenges in my life, it has also left room for asking important questions. Who is a person possessing inherent worth and dignity? How do we live into the fact that there's no such place as a way? People occasionally ask me what led me to become a minister. This is one of the elements of my mission in life, to proclaim and affirm that everybody, and indeed everybody, has built-in value and is a vessel for respect and honor. Attitudes toward people who are different than society expects have only changed slowly over time. In the early 20th century, this is kind of bad news, so sorry about that. Progressives, including Unitarians, were enthusiastic about eugenics. The idea that society could be improved by deciding who is worthy of reproducing. At that time, Unitarian clergy inspected prospective couples to make sure that they were normal, physically and mentally, whatever that meant to them at the time. The renowned Unitarian activist, John Haynes Holmes, encouraged his fellow ministers in the Liberal Ministers Association of New York to perform nothing but healthy marriages for the conservation of the normal family. And his interest was improving society, making sure that defectives did not propagate. Haynes Holmes was using his philosophical perspective to justify disposing of people. Haynes Holmes wrote, "Nothing is more important to my mind in our modern treatment of the question of marriage than to use our powers of social control to prevent many people from marrying, those namely for whom marriage, for one reason or another, can be nothing but a tragedy." Let's consider the reasons to challenge these beliefs. For starters, it is essential for me to be clear and precise with you about this exact thing. My body is not a tragedy. No one's body is a tragedy. Bodies like mine are not defective. Disabled bodies, and what we might consider even average bodies, are examples of some of the infinite ways to be human. We must identify and incorporate this truth in order to move toward equity and justice. And even though Unitarian Universalists mean well, and it's easy for us to ignore barriers that don't affect us, it is important for us to think together about how we devalue the presence of some folks. I invite us together into an ethic of indispensability. An ethic of indispensability, the practice of treating each person as essential in community, asks us to be authentic and do fearless inventory. We must do more than notice the mistakes of others and emphasize our differences. Part of our work is to confront the ways that we participate in the very systems that we say we want to dismantle. This includes the ways we leave people out, the way we leave people behind, and the way we cut people off from community. We are accountable for barriers to community precisely because there is no such place as a way. During World War II, German troops invaded the island of Crete, and they overpowered and killed the resistance. One day, a 6-year-old boy found the wreckage of a German motorcycle. The mirror was broken in many pieces. He spent hours trying to put them together, but he couldn't. He saved the largest one, though, and he smoothed it and smoothed it and smoothed it on a rock. He was fascinated by reflections and loved shining light into shady corners. That boy, Alexander Papaderis, grew up to be a teacher of peace. At a lecture one day, someone asked him, "What is the meaning of life?" He took that small round piece of mirror out of his wallet, and this is what he said: "I am a fragment of a mirror whose design and shape I do not know. Nevertheless, with what I have, I can reflect light into the unlit places of the world, into the clouded places in human hearts, and change some things in some people." Can we do the same? Can we shine light into our own hearts first, do reflection, and make correction? Using the light, taking action when you know something is wrong, is very important. The clear knowledge that we are people in development gives us more compassion for others when they behave badly. What are the ways we may be leaving people out, leaving them behind, or cutting them off at any given moment? What might we do to act in a different way to bring them back in. It is by keeping covenant, brick by brick, and moment by moment, that we build the beloved community. There's no magic wand. This is our work to do. The people in our communities who don't keep covenant and break their promises cannot be managed simply by punitive action or by withholding connection and support. We can say no to the actions, but not to the people. There is no such place as away from them either. We have had to decide in our communities how we respond to the issue of hate. One obvious example is active Nazi and neo-Nazi mobilization. Being a neo-Nazi is not a belief acceptable within the practice of pluralism because it is destructive. Targeting specific people for harm because of their skin color, ethnicity, or religion, and other intrinsic aspects of their identity, like queerness or disability. We are the ones responsible for holding steady the good boundaries that care for and strengthen our communities. We must form faithful responses that allow for the health and well-being of each person by putting a stop to harmful behavior. What about after? How do we reckon with people doing harm and making amends? There is an ancient wisdom story in the book of Luke about a man who had two sons. The younger brother said to his father, something I would never say to my father, "Dad, listen, I want what's coming to me right now." It seemed likely that that younger brother would take the money and waste it. The thing the younger brother hadn't learned was what the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. taught. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. The father relented, dividing the property between them. And it wasn't long before the younger brother packed his bags and went to a distant country. There, undisciplined, self-indulgent, and drunk, he wasted everything he had. Even then, there was no such place as away. Being broke and hungry brought him back to his senses. He said, "Those farmhands working for my father sit down to 3 meals a day. And here I am, starving. I'm going to go back to my father and say, 'Father, I have made mistakes that cannot be fixed. I have hurt your feelings. I have offended God. I don't deserve to be called your son.'" So he was practicing his lines. And we are often on this precipice. A relationship, once damaged, can either be transformed or discarded. When we discard relationships, we discard people. Do you know what happened next? The son journeyed home, and he started his lines. But his father wasn't even listening. Instead, he was calling the servants, "Quick, bring a clean set of clothes. Dress him, put the family ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Get a grain-fed heifer, the best we have. We're going to feast. We're going to have a wonderful time. My son has returned. We gave him up for dead, for lost. And now he's back." How relieved and happy the person in community who can exercise their love and welcome someone back. The dad's joy was palpable and irresistible. Gifts and a celebration complete with a barbecue. Let that joy and welcome remind you that you and the people around you are meant for love. even if you can't be proud of all of your choices, you, your community, are still meant for love. People don't have to be perfect to be awesome. In fact, it turns out that things aren't going to end up perfect. And that's okay. If we try and try harder, that doesn't help us make it. But what we can do is strengthen our integrity. The process won't be perfect, and that's okay. According to the Reverend Nancy McDonald Ladd, in her new book, After the Good News, underneath the will to mutuality, there's a will to perfection. Have you felt that pressure before? Mm-hmm. Pressure to be perfect. She says, it's a will to be personally justified, a will to be effective, and in the end, through all of our carefully calibrated strategies, a will to win the game that was never meant to be a game at all. Winning isn't always possible, but transformation is possible. Our communities must imagine new levels of connectedness in which we are clear that every person is valuable, exactly as they are, in which we preserve connection and human dignity, even when we have to say no to bad behavior and yes to remaking promises. Sometimes we'll break them, and that is how we continue with integrity. Our hope for the present and future lies specifically in our ability to move forward together. Henri Giroux explains that Paulo Freire, the educator, conceived of hope as a practice of witnessing, an act of moral imagination that encourages people to be at the edge of society and to think beyond existing configurations of power. Why? Well, in order to think what has so far been unthinkable in terms of how they might live with dignity, justice, and freedom. We are invited right now to the edge to imagine the most dignity, most justice, and most freedom possible. It's for us and our communities. That's the way that we're moving toward a clear hope. It's a notion of hope grounded in a celebration of human agency. Human agency sounds fancy, right? It really means your ability to choose and act on your choice. That's you, grounded in your community, making choices and acting. There's no away for you or anyone else. And that's how we engage in this vibrant hope. You have a blessing to bring to the world. Bring it imperfectly, but bring it now. Let it be so. Let us be the ones who make it so.